This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. So how's North Carolina doing when it comes to the environment? North Carolina Conservation Network just released its first ever State of the Environment report. It includes data and analysis of more than 100 indicators that measure the overall well-being of our state. The report highlights three priorities: curbing greenhouse gas emissions, addressing racial equity, and building resilience. Grady McCauley is Policy Director for North Carolina Conservation Network, and he joins us now. Welcome, Grady.
Thanks for having us.
Tell us what you set out to do in this report.
So this year is the North Carolina Conservation Network's 20th anniversary, and we've had the good fortune over the last couple decades to work with lots of wonderful advocates and organizations and concerned citizens around the state, but usually on specific campaigns or concerns at a time. And we wanted to take a step back this year and ask, how is North Carolina's environment doing overall? What are the trends? And to use a sustainability lens.
So what kinds of things do you look at?
So we were looking at land and water, we're looking at energy and waste, but we're also looking at public health indicators, education, signals of our social fabric. How strong is our economy? How strong is our infrastructure, the way we've built houses and transportation systems across the landscape?
And of course, those things are sort of come together often helter-skelter. There's no sort of major overall policy network that takes into account all of those things and the way they're integrated.
That's right. That's absolutely right. And in fact, when I say we wanted to use a sustainability lens on this, we recognize that, and I think most people recognize that a strong environment helps sustain a strong economy and vice versa, and both are important for the kind of civil society that we want.
So let's take a look at one. Let's talk about water. It's been in the news, certainly when we think about water in the Cape Fear, Gen X, the contamination stories, not to mention coal ash is another contamination story. How are we doing when it comes to water in North Carolina?
So we found that the indicators on water showed mixed trends this year. And I'll say there are sort of two drivers on that. One connects to the way we develop the landscape and have put impervious surface across the landscape, hard concrete and roofs that shed water when it rains. That tends to carry pollutants and volumes of water into our streams that destroy stream health. The other piece, when you mention emerging contaminants like Gen X and the Cape Fear, there's sort of another concept that's helpful to understand there is that when we look at our systems, this is true for climate, this is true for the chemicals that we produce, we need to see things moving in cycles. Part of what's going on with climate change is we're putting greenhouse gases into the atmosphere faster than they can come out. So we create an insulating blanket around the earth. What's happening with Gen X and chemicals in that family, we're producing chemicals that don't break down. They're toxic and they don't break down for decades or hundreds of years. And whenever you break a cycle like that and start accumulating at one end of it, you end up with environmental and ultimately economic problems.
And also, you talked about the landscape and the way we're managing that. And of course, when we accumulate lots of pollutants in one area, this creates that kind of stress. You just can't filter it fast enough. CAFOs
right.
come to mind, the way we do agriculture.
That's
by
right.
putting large numbers of livestock into one small place. Talk about the ways in which our policy doesn't really take a look, policy at the state level, doesn't look at the ways these kinds of concentrations can act together.
Right. So a lot of our environmental policies, when you look at pollution laws, are driven by the federal environmental laws adopted in the 1970s and early 80s. And they're good laws for what they do. But they have at the root of a lot of those laws is an assumption that there is some safe level of pollution facility by facility. And if we set that, if we set it for the farm, how much can come off the farm? If we set it for the factory, how much can be discharged into the river? Then we'll have protected the ecological systems and human health. That doesn't work for a couple reasons. It doesn't work when you have chemicals that don't break down because they just continue to accumulate in the environment. It doesn't work in the case of CAFOs because we're importing millions, possibly billions of tons of nitrogen and phosphorus in the form of feed every year from the Midwest, from out of state. We're feeding it to the animals. Some of it goes into the animals and leaves with them, but a lot of it stays in waste. So when you look at that from that cycle perspective, we're transferring just a lot of pollution and leaving it here. And our environmental laws weren't set up to take that perspective.
And on a farm-by-farm basis, each one might qualify, but when you put too many of them together, we haven't really looked at what would happen if you concentrated a lot of them in one region.
Right. And some of the data that we have shows pretty clearly that if you bring that much nitrogen phosphorus in, it's more than our land landscape can absorb, and so it runs off and gets into our water.
Well, let's focus on some of the report's other central themes: environmental justice, racial equity. Joining the conversation now is Jamie Cole. She's the Environmental Justice, Air and Materials Policy Manager for the North Carolina Conservation Network. Jamie, welcome. Good to have you here.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
The State of the Environment report identified racial equity as one of the needs we need to focus on. What do you mean by that?
Racial equity, at its heart, just means fairness. I mean, we're looking at how people across North Carolina are being treated when it comes to our environment. And we know that Black and Native American residents are dying at substantially younger ages than our white residents in North Carolina. And when we look at the reasons why, there's direct correlations, or we can make correlations to environmental exposures to pollution. And those things include traffic, just other air toxins, and the fact that in our state right now, the lower income folks are having higher exposures. But when we whittle it down, we see that people of color especially are dying at more significant rates. And that correlation can be made to added additional pollution.
Well,
in
some
the
might
communities.
Some might see that population distribution as random. What kind of policy, or what would policy have to do with remedying some of this?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, we are looking at these indicators, and when it comes down to it, we don't have, like Grady was alluding to, in the state, policies that would make us as strong as we can on this racial equity piece, because that is not taken into consideration when rules are made, when permits are issued, and when other policy considerations are going through our state agencies.
The state is considering a permit for a company in Delco, North Carolina, that would allow the use of a very dangerous pollution, methyl bromide. Tell us about that and sort of how this is also one of the indicators that you're looking at in this report.
Sure. Yeah. So I'll take a step back and just, you know, I do work on environmental justice, and this report is very good at pointing out how these issues connect to environmental justice and equity. And Delco is an excellent example of a permit that would have been issued for methyl bromide, which is outlawed in every other way except for this log fumigation exception. And folks in that community had to really speak up to the state agency and say, we don't want this pollutant in our community, not just because we don't want methyl bromide in our community, but when you look at the community in totality, there are all of these factors, the racial component, the fact that there are other vulnerable folks directly around the facility, like schools and other people who do have these disproportionate impacts. And we realize that the state actually does not have a requirement to consider those things outside of the fence line of the facility that's looking to receive a permit. So this permit actually was withdrawn subsequently because of the community outcry, and the Department of the Division of Air Quality is going through a rulemaking process to better regulate methyl bromide. But it really took community voices where there is not currently a policy to take all of those additional considerations.
We are talking about the state of North Carolina and its environment today on The State of Things. Jamie Cole is Environmental Justice and Air Materials Policy Manager with the North Carolina Conservation Network. Grady McCauley is also here, Policy Director. So this really brings us to a very interesting point, that these policies are not always in place. It takes people in those localities, perhaps, to bring it to the attention of the state. And, of course, the paradox is that people who live in poorer communities don't often have the time or the resources to do that kind of organizing.
Exactly. And so the burden then falls on the same people who would be most impacted by that permit being issued. And what we've seen is that where, you know, most folks are seeing in their communities these facilities popping up, and they know they may see the pollution, they may smell it, they may feel it, and they assume that the state is looking out for them. They assume that there are certain policies that would prevent several pollution points from impacting their health. But in fact, there just isn't a systematic way for our policies to actually take those things into consideration. So where we're seeing these vulnerable communities have several different exposures, right? And that doesn't mean they're having more exposure to pollution than another community, but because they have several different exposures happening all at once, that really lends itself to the racial equity conversation. I mean, how are these communities being treated fairly, and do we have policies in the state to ensure that they're being treated fairly, like like a lot of folks assume the state right. is doing.
And who would know that this one chemical, which is outlawed everywhere else, has some kind of an exception and can be here. Well, I want to get to one other aspect of this report, and that is resilience as a priority for a healthy future. Again, what do we mean by that?
Yeah, so, I mean, resiliency can mean a lot of things, but it's really, in terms of this report, it's decreasing the vulnerability of people's health being impacted and people's property being impacted by our changing climate. I mean, we've seen these 500-year floods happen in the last few years, and a lot of folks are asking, how are we as a state moving forward in a way that's smart and that's making sure that we aren't repeatedly impacted in the same way we have been?
So are there, now this is the first report, Grady McCauley, I'll talk to you about this. What's the hope for this report?
So we intend to issue an updated version of it next year. And a lot of the indicators, we tried to look for 5 to 10 years of data. Some of them we just have a single year of data. So we're looking forward next year to being able to spot more trends.
Grady McCauley, Jamie Cole with the North Carolina Conservation Network. Grady is the policy director. Jamie is environmental justice, air and materials policy manager. Thank you both for being with us.
Thanks so much for having us.
There are links to their report at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, what's life like for the average minimum wage worker in our state? And should we raise the minimum wage to $15? We'll talk about it on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Stay tuned.